century. Doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen. Do it. Screams from the haters. Got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need the same music. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking, I just count the hours. Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. Broken, the school closed, the prison's open. We ain't got nothing to lose. Everybody, we rolling. Everybody, we rolling. With some light-skinned girls and some Kelly rolling. And it's white man world, we the ones chosen. So good night, cool world. I see you in the morning. I see you in the morning. This is way too much, I need a moment. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking, I just count the hours. I'm tripping off the power. Till then, that's the world's hours. I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it, do it better than anybody you ever seen, do it, screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it, I guess every superhero need the same music, no one man should have all that power, the clock ticking, I just count the hours, stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power.
Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Testing, 1, 2, 3, can you hear me? Testing, 1, 2, 3, can you hear me? You know, one of the crazy things about doing a live show sometimes is that you run into technical difficulties beyond our control. And for those of you who decide to stay on with us through these last few minutes, I want to thank you. You're listening to Love and Life with Nick Nice. And I am, as usual, your host, Nick Nice. We have a lot to talk about today, and but I want to thank you, first of all, for staying tuned with us. I apologize for the technical difficulties. But like Kanye said, every superhero needs his theme music, and shout out to Clark for swooping me in and saving the day. So let's get this party started. Today we have an amazing show. It's kind of one of those shows I've wanted to do for a long time. We have Professor Eric Anderson, who is a professor of sociology at the University of Winchester, and he's going to be talking about monogamy, cheating, and open relationships, so we definitely want to get into that. And you'll be surprised, because he says some pretty interesting things. I think it's one of them conversations that couples should get together and listen to together and maybe debate and talk about afterwards and see how you feel about it, right? But anyway, after that, we got a lady named Pearl joining us for the life conversation. And she'll be talking to us, or with us, rather, about the life style, rather, of hair and being natural. And as a hip-hop artist, a professor, a woman who's graced not only corporate stages but modeling stages as well, we'll kind of get her perspective on being natural and how it's, you know, a little bit more layers and textures to it. So we look forward to getting to that part of the conversation. And then lastly, I'll just talk a little bit about why I salute anyone, you know what I mean, that's doing their thing, because at the end of the day, society tries to define you. And hey, whatever your thing is, I salute you. Just be true to you. So I'll talk a little bit about that. But like I said, we have a great show lined up, so I really want to kind of get right into it. Quick announcement, I'm hosting, that's right, if you're in ATL, join me. I'm hosting the UM Music Meet event on October 15th at 7 p.m. That's at Mardi Gras Cafe. If you want to get more information, go to www.umusicmeet.com to RSVP. Well, listen, we're already a little started late, but we're going to keep the party going. Thank you again for joining me. I'm your host, Nick Nice, and you're listening to Love and Life with Nick Nice on Survivor Radio Network. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.
Atlanta, where desserts are created and you taste love. Looking to fill your sweet tooth? Do you have a special event or occasion you're planning? Give Cake Cafe Atlanta a call. Located at 368 Candler Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317. Open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 7 p.m. You can get the best in pies, cakes, cobblers, coffee, brownies, specialty popcorn, and more. Visit their website at www.cakecafeatlanta.com or give them a call at 404-284-0106. That's 404-284-0106. Call Cake Cafe Atlanta today.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Love and Life with Nick Nice, and of course, I am Nick Nice. Like I said, we have an amazing show for you tonight, and I'm excited to just get right into it. As usual, our first segment is about love, and today we're talking about monogamy, cheating, and that's right, open relationships. So let's just get right into it. With us right now, we have Professor Eric Anderson. He's an American sociologist at the University of Winchester. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thanks, Nick. Nice to be here.
Yes, sir. So, you know, why don't we start with you? You know, tell us a little bit about you and what led to you writing your book.
I was inspired to write the book when I came out of the closet in 1993. I used to hang around a gay coffee shop, predominantly youth, about 40 or 50 every night would hang out. And the topic of conversation was always who was cheating on who. And that was a weekly occurrence. And then, years later, after doing my PhD, studying masculinities and sexualities, the first day of the semester at my new university, I asked my students to introduce themselves and say something about themselves that was memorable. And this one student said, you know, my name is Harry, and I hate when people cheat. And I thought, well, that's an unusual response. Most people said something like, you know, I love football or whatever. And I asked him why he said that. And he said, well, I've only been at university a week already, and everybody's cheating on their boyfriends or girlfriends from back home. And so that led me to begin to investigate, you know, what was the incidence of cheating amongst heterosexual undergraduate youth. And that led me to, a couple years of research and the book that you have before you, The Monogamy Gap.
Right, The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. And, you know, as a man, I can totally relate because there's some things you found in writing this book and some of the research that you did. So can you kind of talk about the overall concept of the book and what you wanted people to kind of get from it?
Absolutely. The overall concept is that there is a dangerous myth amongst psychologists, mostly practicing psychologists, mostly those who are not researchers. So I'm talking about, marriage and family child counselors. I'm talking about, you know, the kind of psychologist you would go to see, you know, for a divorce or something. And the myth is that if somebody's cheated on you in your relationship, whether married or not, that it's a sign that there's something wrong with the relationship, that it means your partner fundamentally isn't happy with you or doesn't love you. And there's a great deal of cultural pressure for people to break up with their partners when cheating is discovered or divulged. There's this belief, and again, it's a myth, that cheating is the ultimate act of betrayal to a relationship. And none of that makes common sense. None of that, you know, none of that seems to hold true. And so what my book does is investigates this question, and the principal question is how often do people cheat? But more important is, why do people cheat? And so what I did is I looked to a group of people who didn't have significant investments that would keep them in a relationship that they were fundamentally unhappy with. So I didn't want to look at cheaters who were married and had a mortgage together, because they might stay with their partners because of financial necessity or because their parents, not out of love. So what I did is I look to young men, both gay and straight, to see, you know, who don't have a mortgage together and don't have kids, to see how often and, more importantly, why they were cheating. Now, how often they were cheating was remarkable. It was about 78% had cheated on their current partner. Not ever cheated, but cheated on their current partner. And the why was equally as revealing. They were cheating because they had sexual habituation in their relationships. They loved their partners, but the sexual novelty had worn off, and they were seeking extra sexual stimuli outside of the relationship while hoping to maintain the relationship. And I've recently done research, and it's not yet published, on middle-aged women and why they cheat. And what I've done here is I've looked at AshleyMadison.com, and I've looked at the exchanges between women on this website who are looking to have affairs with men without their knowledge that I'm looking at them. And what I found here amongst these women who are 35 to 45 years of age was the precise same thing. They expressed great love for their husbands. They weren't looking to get out of the relationships. They didn't feel there was something wrong with the relationship. They just wanted some exciting, romantic, sexual stimuli on the side. And so the book basically says this myth that if you are happy with your partner, if your love is strong, the sex will be equally as strong, is dangerous and counterproductive to the family. In other words, monogamy is a threat to the American family more so than cheating.
Wow, that last statement is kind of loaded, right? Because, you know, most people are kind of trained or conditioned to think that, you know, you get married after, you know, go to school and settling down to monogamy and relationship, and that kind of also mixes in religion and stuff like that. So why do you say, like, in terms of monogamy being even more dangerous, if you will, towards relationships?
Because the number one reason that couples break up, and that includes couples with children, is that somebody cheated, and that's the wrong reason to break up. It's important to break up with a partner if there's abuse in the relationship, without doubt, whether that be abuse directed towards one of the spouses or the children. But for a couple to break up, divorce, even in a household with children, simply because somebody desired sex outside of the relationship, to put children through that is preposterous. The number one reason divorce occurs is because cheating has happened. And we all want to blame the cheater, but our research shows that cheating is more than the norm. So the question is breaking up with your husband or your wife for cheating worth the cost of throwing away a years-long relationship with stability, happiness, where the two couples are what they should be after years of being together, best of friends, with history, mortgages, and children? Is that really worth throwing away simply because somebody did something with their genitalia with someone else? And the answer to any rational person is absolutely not.
Now, do you make a distinction between cheating and affairs, where one may be more of a sexual tone versus the other maybe being more emotionally involved?
Yes, absolutely. So in the book, The Monogamy Gap, I look solely at cheating. And what I found was that these young men were very adept at separating their emotional lives from their sexual lives. They weren't interested in even necessarily knowing the names of the women they were cheating with. They just wanted the sex. In my research on middle-aged women, I find it's a little bit more difficult. Most women are looking for some emotional connection, and particularly they're looking for romance with their sex. And that, of course, leads you more into the land of having an affair, which is probably why the number one website for marital affairs, AshleyMadison.com, with millions and millions of users, I think it's like 12 million or something, they frame it as life is short, have an affair, not life is short and cheat. In fact, the women on that website were pretty explicit that they weren't looking for one-off sexual relationships. They weren't looking for a one-night stand, whereas the men, quite the opposite. They were off looking for one-night stands, meaningless sex, that they thought would be easier to hide from their girlfriends as well. So there is, of course, a difference between if one's partner is having an affair, that might be more grounds for divorce, and I say might, than if one's partner is simply just cheated. But what's interesting about that is it seems then that women would be more likely to have affairs and men more likely to cheat. But when simple cheating is divulged, 50% of women break up with their partners, where only a quarter of men do. So women are the harbingers of monogamy, and it comes at a great cost to them as well.
Wow. One of the things I also thought that was fascinating was that you kind of talk about how, you know, the longer a couple is together, that, you know, over time sex is naturally going to decline, and how that's not a bad thing. Because I think people look at that and say, oh, well, that's why they're cheating. But you kind of talk about that and say that it's actually a good thing because it's more of an emotional connection. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Fantastic, and it's a really good point. I'm glad you brought up from the book, is that the cultural myth, again, is that that the sign of a healthy relationship is sex. And I argue that, no, the sign of a healthy relationship is that you've had sex perhaps when you were younger, as a younger couple, but that you've worked into evolved love where it's a partnership between two people. And what this does is it removes you from the blinders of sex. So we know, you know, early in relationships, people can get blinded by sexual attractiveness, and they can not see all kinds of character faults with the person that they're dating because they're so sexually attractive. But in a long-term relationship where the sexual attraction is gone and a couple remains together, you now have evidence that the couple is together for emotional reasons, for reasons of character and mutual interest and so forth. So they grow together as a couple. They grow essentially, I don't want to over-romanticize, but they grow together as one. And they're no longer blinded by sex. And so essentially, a sexless marriage, which almost all marriages end up being, and when I say sexless, it can either mean quite literally sexless, or it can mean sex happens, you know, on Valentine's Day or, you know, occasionally on a special occasion, that those couples, which is the vast majority of American couples, they're together for the proper reasons.
You know, that's another thing I think that's kind of interesting, too, and we'll talk a little bit more about open relationships, but I've heard some people say that, you know, especially for younger couples, maybe having not waited until it became sexless, maybe recognized that they wanted to put sex in its place, if you will. And I guess it kind of puts more of a, I guess, pressure, if you will, for lack of a better term, on the emotional connection that one has, especially in that kind of open relationship. Is that kind of similar to what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And let me give you sort of a cute little exercise that I do with my classes. And this, women are victimized by this culture more than men. So I'm not blaming women, but I'm blaming the culture collectively, in that they're, you know, that collectively they're driven towards monogamy even more. So I say to my students, my undergraduates, I say, what's more important to you, the sexual dynamics of your relationship or the emotional dynamics of your relationships? What's more important, the emotions or the sex? And they all raise their hands and say emotions. A few say sex. And then I say, well, isn't that interesting then? You know, women, what would you do if, you know, you found out that your boyfriend was cheating on you? And, you know, almost unanimously they say, well, I'd break up with him, which is precisely why men don't tell women when they've cheated. It's a foolish errand to tell someone you cheated on them. And then I say, well, if you tell me that you privilege the emotional over the sexual, why is it you only police the sexual? And they look at me a bit confused, and I say, how many of you women have a female best friend that you tell everything to, including things you don't tell your partner, your boyfriend? And they all do. All women have this, you know, at least one friend, and they talk about the relationship they're with their friend, and they tell their friend things they don't tell their husband. I've got plenty of female friends who tell me things that they don't tell their male partners. And I say, so isn't that interesting? You're emotionally cheating. You're sharing with me emotions that you're not sharing with your husband. Should he break up with you for this? if we truly privilege the emotional over the sexual, should he not break up with you for this? This is cheating. But the reality is that we police the physical only, because at a different level, we recognize that it's ludicrous, absolutely asinine, to believe that there's one person out there who can meet all of your emotional needs. If there was, great. Find them and move to Antarctic and live together in a blissful penguin life. Because Because it's ridiculous. We're social creatures. Different people fulfill different parts of our lives. We act differently around different people. We emote differently around different people. And our wives or husbands may occupy an esteemed and privileged place, but that doesn't even mean that they occupy the most fun place or the most rewarding place. We cannot survive with just one person to relate to emotionally. And so we all sort of recognize that that's reasonable. And actually it's quite healthy for women to discuss and vent their relationships with other women, and the same goes for men. But then we should also realize that just as silly as it is to say that one should break up with their boyfriend, or the boyfriend should break up with the girlfriend just because she talked about her emotions with another woman, it is equally as silly to say we should break up with our partners just because they had some sexual experience with someone else. They're both ludicrous propositions.
Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the reason that people have the desire to have sex with other people. I think you called it sexual novelty. Can you talk to us a little bit about that concept?
Absolutely. And it's changed dramatically from members of Generation X and those who are older. So those who are in their 40s and older particularly, compared to what it means to be 18 years old today. But regardless of one's age, we quickly become habituated to the sex that we have with a partner. And this is part of the human condition. We all always habituate. You ride a roller coaster the first time, and it's the most exciting thing you've ever done in your life. And then the second time, it's still exciting, and then the 10th time, you fall asleep on it. A guy brings a girl flowers after her first date, and she's like, oh, well, she's all swooning with endorphins of love. And he brings her flowers the next day, and she's like, oh, my God, he did it again. How sweet. And by the 10th day, or probably by the 5th day, it's like, oh, flowers, great, thanks, put them over there. The same stimuli, the same act ceases to yield the same excitement in the person who's receiving the act. And so when people join into a relationship, they quickly start this escalator of trying to do romantic things because romance wears out. So, it's they're trying to up themselves all of the time. And this is, again, it's a fool's errand because it's impossible to keep outdoing oneself. And the same thing happens with sex. We get used to the sex, so we try something different. And we try different positions, and we try something that's a bit more taboo, maybe a finger here or there or something of that nature. And then we try different locations. That's exciting. We go do it on the golf course or something, back of a car in the church parking lot or something like that, So we do something that makes it more dangerous, more exciting, more different, kitchen countertop, whatever. But all of these things are limited in their capacity. You can't keep reinventing sex to make it more and more exciting, because essentially you're dealing with the same body. And you can keep putting different pizzas, toppings on pizza, but you still don't want to eat pizza every night for dinner. You want something different eventually, as desirable as pizza is. So sexual habituation is a longstanding and uncontested sociological, sexological finding. There's nobody who says that habituation doesn't occur in sexual relationships. Pop psychologists, who are not researchers, they say ridiculous things like, well, you just have to keep finding ways to spice it up, or maybe if he took better care of his body or she lost some weight or whatever, that would change matters. And that's, again, that's victim blaming. We are, as human beings, conditioned to grow habituated to sex with the same person. Clearly, it's an evolutionary perspective that permit, that sort of made us spread out, that farther and wider turns of our seeds. But this sexual habituation is more rapid for youth today, and I'll explain why. It used to be that, like the 1950s style dating, you dated for a while, you got lucky to kiss, that was first base, whatever, You weren't allowed to have sex until marriage. And I'm being heteronormative here. I don't mean to exclude gays and lesbians, but gays and lesbians weren't having a lot of open relationships. I mean, a lot of back in the 1950s, most gay men were marrying women anyhow. You finally had sex after marriage, supposedly, and you had no models for sex. Maybe you were lucky to get a Skin magazine and see a static image of people having sex, but pornography was much more hard to come across. You had to go buy it in a store in a seedy part of town, or order it in a brown envelope, that sort of thing. And so we didn't really have a lot of models for what what sex could offer in bed. And so couples felt that they discovered sex themselves. It was quite literally, there's a line in Avenue Q where it says, put your finger, you can't put your finger there. Ooh, put your finger there. And research shows that older people feel like they invented sex, like they invented all of these taboo things, that they just came across them. So what I'm basically saying is for older people, their first age of sex came later in life. The amount of sex they got was far less. And then they slowly invented sex together, discovering things together. For youth, this has completely changed. They all know everything about sex from the time they start watching pornography when they're 11. On average, men do, boys do. By the time they're 16, over here in England, by the time they're 16, I don't know what the percentage is, but you know, the 16-year-olds I know, it's at least 50% or more have had sex. They've all been something else. But they know everything, and you know, you can do as I do myself. Pull out my iPhone and pull up your favorite porn, and there you go. And you see everything. So you know everything before you even start having sex. And so what that does, an unfortunate side effect of pornography, and there's a whole lot of real positive, socio-positive advantages to pornography, including reduction of violence against women. But there's a lot of advantages of pornography. But one of the disadvantages is it does teach you everything so that you don't really get to invent anything on your own. And sexual habituation for youth today occurs at a faster rate. And so what this means is monogamy is going to be even more challenging for today's youth than it is for people of an older generation.
And I think economists have a term for kind of what you're talking about, the law of diminishing marginal utility, and that, you know, after the first use, you're going to, you know, maximize the consumption that you get from that, but over the next uses, it kind of diminishes in terms of the value. So in other words,
absolutely,
if you're having some more and more sex, the enjoyment of that, the value of that sex diminishes over time. But I think one thing, too, I kind of, for me, I make a distinction when you talk about cheating and, say, open relationships. I think the difference is that you're being more open and honest in regards to what's going on. And I think that that's kind of what makes maybe some open relationships a little different than monogamous relationships in terms of the level of honesty of what's going on. Can you speak to the differences between that and why you may think that open relationships typically are happier than monogamous ones?
Open relationships fundamentally are happier than closed monogamous relationships for multiple reasons. The first is they wither at jealousy scripts. Now, jealousy is a natural inborn trait. I've got 2 1-year-old boys, and I see it in them all the time. But we can learn what to attach it to, and we can learn how to unattach ourselves from jealousy. And so the first thing that couples in open relationships do is they learn to unattach jealousy. And it begins by a simple rescripting of, oh, my God, my boyfriend or girlfriend has gone off and had sex with someone else. I'm so jealous, to, wait a minute. When my boyfriend or girlfriend gets the job they want, or they publish the book they wanted to, or they get a part in the play they wanted to, or they get the sports team victory that they wanted, I'm happy for them. There's something they wanted. They went after it. They got it. They got it. That makes me happy. I'm happy my partner's happy. But we reverse that with sex. Oh, my God, my partner really wanted sex with that hot girl really bad. I'm so jealous he got it. So what couples in open relationships learn to do is to start to say, wait a minute, if it makes my partner happy, shouldn't that make me happy? And that simple rescripting opens them up to a new perspective on viewing their partners having sex with someone else. And the second thing they learn to do is not to have jealousy, the feeling of jealousy, control one's sexual desires. So, for example, and this is what couples do in monogamous relationships, they're jealous of the fact that their partner might have sex with someone else, so they use that jealousy to control their partner. Oh, my God, there's some new guy at work, and my husband is attracted to him, and, geez, you know, he's at work a lot, and it starts to be, so who's this guy at work, and what do you do, and blah, 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 and why are you staying later after work? And we start to control, and it's a slow process, but we start to control our partners more and more the longer we're with them, to prevent them from straying from the nest. And nobody likes to be controlled. That engenders all kinds of negative emotions. And then finally, the one thing that monogamous couples can't do is ever erase the suspicion that one might be cheating. Oh, yes, lots of them will ostensibly tell you, I absolutely trust my partner 100% that he or she wouldn't cheat. But that's not true. plant a few seeds and see how strong that trust is. Put a little red lipstick on a on a shirt collar and see see what the wife thinks of it. We'll drive her batty. And that's because monogamy has within it that ownership script that can't be undone, which leads to controlling, which leads to jealousy and constant suspicion. Whereas couples in open sexual relationships, well, they don't have suspicions. So my wife is going to stop off at her friend's house on the way home to have a quick bout of sex. I know what's going on. There's no suspicion. It reduces the ownership, it reduces the suspicion, and it reduces the jealousy. That doesn't take a PhD to figure out that that's going to have healthier emotional outcomes. But when PhDs examine this stuff, we do find indeed that it has healthier emotional outcomes. Couples in open relationships have longer relationships. They have more honest relationships. They report higher satisfaction in their relationships than couples in monogamous relationships. So this sounds like an amazing and wonderful thing. And for those in them, they are. They can be very amazing and wonderful. It doesn't mean that they're always going to work out. Things can still go wrong in relationships. I once asked a graduate class, how many of you have tried an open relationship? And several people have, and they say, yeah, but it didn't work out for me, so I'm not going to do that again. And I say, well, wait a minute. How many monogamous partners have you been with and broken up with? We don't say that about that. We don't say, oh, well, I'm doing monogamy with this guy. He cheated on me, so I broke up with him, so I'm not going to try monogamy again. So we hold open relationships to a higher standard. But the real problem here is this. Monogamism puts people in a catch-22. So these young men in my classes, they're looking at the women who say that if their partner cheats, they will break up with them. And they're thinking, well, I love my girlfriend, and I don't want her to break up with me, but I do want sex with someone else. So I do the thing where I say, hey, honey, let's have a discussion about open relationships because I love you and I want to stay with you, but we both recognize our sex is dying and I would like some sex on the side, and I'm sure you would too. Or do I cheat? And unfortunately, the logical answer is to cheat. Because if your primary goal is to keep your partner, in this day and age, telling your girlfriend that you want an open relationship is pretty much so a recipe for her breaking up with you. And that's what men fear. That's what these guys fear. It's like, if I'm honest about wanting an open relationship, she's going to break up with me. I don't want her to break up with me, so I'm not going to tell her I'm going to have sex with people. And it has the added bonus of, I get to have sex with somebody I want, but she doesn't. So there's still the control element. Mm-hmm.
No, it really is. And I think that, you know, honesty, you know, both with each other is important. But I think the other thing, too, that I found, especially with open relationships, is a certain level of honesty that you have to have with yourself, particularly when you're talking about insecurity. Because oftentimes I think the fear of losing that person, like you just mentioned, but I think, like, for example, a person may feel like, oh, he might like her better than me. Or, you know, he might find something out there that, you know, may compete with what I'm providing and I may lose that person. Can you speak to that part of it too? Because I think there's some of our listeners who are thinking about that in terms of that level of insecurity of losing that person.
Well, that's a brilliant concept you've just addressed. And I discussed that in my book by saying that really the best approach to an open relationship is the greenhouse effect, which is do monogamy for a while. Do monogamy for a couple of years, perhaps, depending on one's age. If you're younger, a couple of years is pretty hard to squeak out. But do monogamy for a period of time and grow the emotional relationship. Wait to have sex with other people until the emotional relationship is strong and it has good history behind it. Because if you're afraid that someone's going to go off and find a better partner, now they've got to compete with history as well. It's like, do I really want to lose everything that I've got? And
exactly.
So that's sort of the way. I mean, I'm not opposed to people doing open relationships right off the bat. There are a particular percentage of people who are quite good at being honest about their emotions and who say up front, I would not want monogamy nor ever do monogamy. But for most people who have bought into the cultural message, the longer you've been in your relationship, it's the safer it is to open that relationship up for extra sex. Because, you know, so if you've been with your partner for, you know, 40 years, let's say, you've got kids and grandkids and a house in the Hampshires or whatever it is, Hamptons or whatever that expression is, are you really going to want to go off with some new hot fling when everything is great in your relationship? Is that person that you're husband or wife is having sex with on the side, is it really a threat? And the longer you've been together, the less of a threat it actually is.
Gotcha. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you about this, and I'm sure people will be interested to know where can they find out more about you and your book and your ideas and your research. Can you tell people where they can find out more about you and your book?
Absolutely. So my name is Eric Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, and they can find me at my website, ericandersonphd.com, or just Google Eric Anderson, and I'm the first sociologist that comes up. I think I'm actually the number one hit on Google for Eric Anderson. And on my website, there's a link to my book, and there are videos of me and radio interviews of me discussing these issues all across the world, and links to dozens, if not 100, articles about this topic.
Wow. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the time that we had, and continue doing your research because I know it's needed out there, especially with all the conditioning that's going on. Thank you again for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, Nick.
Well, don't go anywhere because next up we have my interview with Linda Pearl Thies M.A., a.k.a. Elaine M. Pearl, also a.k.a. Talia Wahid, 2013 natural top hair model. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
Tired of applying for jobs only to get turned down because of the economy or lack of a degree? What if you can qualify to work for those same Fortune 500 companies without worrying about a degree? And work them from the comfort of your home. With JP Employment Services, LLC, enjoy the benefits of making your own hours, enjoy more free time, and earn a great salary. For details, call 678-835-7371. That's 678-835-7371. Or go to www.jpemployment.com. Must be able to pass a background check and certification. Call JP Employment today.
Shaving my head, true natural beauty. Wearing weeds for years, emulating chicks off the movies. Subliminals had me feeling halfway beauty. I finally overcame the demise. I arrived, going inside, nothing artificial. One of a kind, certified pearls official. Breaking so-called tradition. 5'11 model type, gifted with the mental. 5'0 instrumental, every step in tempo. On a journey to make weight. Legacy, I'm a great.
I'm a great. Nothing less. Yes. Light shines, so luminous. Luminous. And we're back. This is Love and Life with Nick Noyce. Nick, I can't even say my own name right. This is Love and Life with Nick Noyce. And, of course, I am Nick Noyce, although there are plenty of folks who have gotten my name correctly. Anyways, that was a love segment, and that was a lot. So go ahead and let that digest for a few minutes. But anyways, I have nothing but love for you. We got to keep it moving. Don't forget you can actually join the conversation by calling 347-989-8385 and press 1. Our next segment is about life and, I guess, in essence, lifestyle. And I wanted to bring her on so we can talk about that. That was her song, The Natural Remix, with DJ Kemet. I am excited to have Linda Pearl Thies-M, or Thies-M-A, depending on how you want to pronounce it, with the French pronunciation, a.k.a. a lady named Pearl. And let me get it correct. A.K.A. Talia Wahid's 2013 top natural hair model. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Pearl. Pearl, are you with me?
Yes, I am. I'm here. How are you, Nick? Nice.
I mean, I got so much going on right now, but I am excited to have you on the show. We've obviously talked about having you on the show, and so it's finally here. So let's start from the top a little bit. Tell us a little bit about you, and then obviously what led up to the moment of you going natural.
All right. Well, I won't go too far back. I'm originally from Miami, Florida. Got to Atlanta to pursue my MBA, and while I was here in Atlanta, well, first of all, just to stay on topic, I got my hair relaxed probably when I was probably about 11 years old, and I've been relaxed. I've been relaxed for over 15 years. And probably about 5 years ago, when I got to Atlanta, Georgia, my hairstylist recommended that I go natural. I went natural, but although I went natural, no one ever saw my natural hair because I was still getting the 14-inch weaves. So as I said earlier, I came to Atlanta to get my MBA. So after I got my MBA, I went to a remote area in Arkansas to work for a corporation, and I couldn't find anyone to maintain my natural hair. So I went back to relaxing my hair. And after I spent some time with that corporation, I came back to Atlanta, and, you know, my hair was really damaged, so I decided to do the big chop and go natural, you know, for sure, no matter what, and expose my natural hair.
Wow. Now, we're going to get into it a little bit because I think you mentioned some of it, but for our audience that doesn't know or don't know, you're a hip-hop artist.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. You know, you're also a professor at Clark Atlanta. You know, you also talked a little bit about the background of corporate. So you've kind of had a chance to dabble in, like, a lot of different environments, from the corporate environment to the classroom to just kind of like the club, if you will, in terms of performing. So I just kind of wanted to make sure that people understood that when you're talking about being natural, there's a lot of different arenas that you were already kind of working in. So let's talk a little bit more about the transition. Was it like a big chop thing? Like, how did the – I mean, once you kind of was like, okay, you know what, I got to go ahead and kind of, you know, get it popping. Like, what was that transition like from finally saying, you know, I'm not going to do the additional stuff to kind of keep it moving?
Looking back in retrospect, I think it was a transformation. And it's ironic that my first album is called Transformation. But when I left – yeah, when I left corporate America, I think I was ready for a change. And I was looking to do something, you know, I don't want to say dramatic, but I was just ready to change my life and start over. So when I left corporate America, doing the big chop kind of mirrored my process of thinking, not wanting to be in systems, not wanting to fall prey to what others told me worked, you know, because I went to corporate because people said stability was in corporate. My hair, the way I looked was me mimicking what I saw on television. So me doing a big chop was me starting over and recognizing all the different systems that were around me and me defining myself.
And, you know, the thing about that, though, that I loved when we talked about this earlier was that kind of, you know, made you feel like you were liberated a little bit from these systems or from these ways of thinking or even from the conditioning. Was that part of it, too, for you?
Yeah, it definitely was a liberating process for me. Now, when I was doing it, I didn't realize it, but looking back in retrospect, I clearly see it now.
Now, you know, it seems like when you watch, I mean, where would you get these ideas from, right, to begin with, as far as a young girl?
Yeah.
Society thinks it's beautiful, so when you have, like, pop culture dictating a certain height or a certain skin tone or a certain hairstyle or whatever, that dictates what beautiful is. But how did going natural seem to challenge that in terms of defining your own beauty for yourself?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, or within your question, I know when I was in high school, that's when I started getting weaves. And I think I did that just to, you know, fall in the trend of what was going on based on pop culture. And, you know, you just kind of go, when you even look at the magazines and you look at the covers of magazines, you know, you don't, now today I'm starting to see a little bit more natural women being on a platform as beauty, but growing up, you didn't see a lot of that. So I fell prey to pop culture. Me shaving my head and me going natural, you know, definitely went against all of that. And I'm sorry, what was your question again, Nick, as far as what were you looking for in my response with that?
Well, no, I think you answered it kind of, because a lot of it was just in terms of defining for yourself what beauty was and not just beholden to that. But, you know, the funny thing is when I talk to people about being naturals, initially there was like the stereotype of what being natural is, right? And then I realized there's like so many different, you know, styles and different vibes and different reasons why people go natural. Can you talk to us a little bit about the diversity of women that you kind of come across in terms of just the kind of natural lifestyle?
Yeah, so let me, because you just triggered something in my mind. So when I was growing up and I saw natural women, I was like, oh, my gosh, I had the stereotypes in my head. Earthy, not cool, not hip, you know. Where are the sexy hip women? So definitely natural was not, like, something that I thought was cool and hip. So I fell into that stereotype. But when I got to Atlanta, because, you know, Atlanta, I feel like it's, you know, the civil rights movement was very strong here. So the people here in Atlanta, well, there's different segments of Atlanta, but there is a segment of Atlanta of people that are very conscious. And they range in all different types of ages from different walks of life. So I found women that were sexy, that were cool, that were hip, that were into the things that I was into. That destroyed the stereotypes I had about natural, you know, natural hair women, and just changed my entire perception. So when you talk about different walks of life, I mean, you know, natural hair women with tattoos, natural hair women that are doctors, natural hair women that are attorneys, you know, natural hair women with their own businesses. It's just a complete array of different type of natural hair women. And we all do it for different reasons. So it's not always the same reason that you go natural. So, I've learned a lot being here in Atlanta.
Well, I was going to say, you also have natural women who are professors, natural women who are also rappers, natural women who are models, right? So
the whole definition
of what natural women are continues to expound. But before we talk a little bit more about the hip-hop side, I know, you know, with you being Taliyah Waheed's, you know, 2013 top natural hair model, that kind of made me realize, too, because they provide products for those people who don't know, that one of the other stereotypes is that it's like, for some people, for everybody, it's easy. Like, oh, once I go natural, I'm not going to have to spend any money. I'm not going to have, you know. But the truth of the matter is that although you may have a short hairstyle, but I know you kind of rock it different ways, too. But can you talk a little bit about this, like, just the whole maintenance in terms of the broad
range? Yes. So it's not as easy. I'm so happy because I don't have to spend $300 or $400 weaving my hair up. That's really, catered to me because I do have a short brush cut natural hair. So all I spend is $20, you know, every 2 weeks to get a haircut. And Taliyah Waheed's curly cream product, I love that because it defines my waves and it eliminates frizz. But for people that have natural hair, you do invest energy in it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to put that myth out there that, you know, just because your hair is natural, you know, it's not that there isn't maintenance involved, because there is maintenance involved and you will spend money on products. And it's a process to learn your hair, because we've relaxed our hair for so long, we don't know how to maintain our natural hair. And that frightens some people at times as well. Because when I first went natural, I didn't know how to maintain my hair. So companies like Taliyah Waheed, they provide products to help you, you know, maintain your hair. And they also provide workshops to teach you how to style your hair, because there are so many ways for you to style your natural hair. And I don't know if I can give a plug, but there will be a major workshop and a major show this Saturday and Sunday for those that are looking to educate themselves more on natural hair. There will be tons of workshops and tons of products that you can be exposed to really understand how to take charge of your hair and how to love it and how to manage it.
Oh, hey, plug away, and that's all gravy. The other thing I want to talk about, because we don't have as much time, but I also want to talk about you as a hip-hop artist, because, you know, when you talk about the women who have represented hip-hop, and when you're talking about even maybe having a natural vibe, I'd have to probably go as far back as Lauryn Hill, when you think about the different Remy Ma's and all that, and I've enjoyed all of them. But in terms of being a hip-hop artist in the game, especially a male-dominated one, how important was it for you in terms of defining yourself and being natural? I mean, you clearly have a single out as well as a remix, Kemet. Why was that important for you to take that stance in regards to that single?
Well, a friend of mine had, when I decided to do the Big Chop, I had mentioned it to a friend, and he said, you know, you really should write some lyrics about that experience. So as soon as I experienced Shaving My Head, I wrote some lyrics, and I said, you know, Shaving My Head, True Natural Beauty, you know, just like Wearing Weaves for Years, imitating the chicks off the movies, you know, really talking about my experience of why I did it, and now I understand that hair doesn't define beauty, and, you know, it's about who you are truly inside. But one thing that I do want to bring up is I love Lauryn Hill's lyrics, "Look at where you been, hair like Europeans, fake nails done by Koreans," you know, stop trying to be something that you're not, you know what I'm saying? Embrace who you are naturally. Now, I've also gotten to a point where I understand hair is a form of artistic expression. So if you are, you know, wanting to express yourself artistically and you feel artistically that you like your hair being straight, okay, fine. But what about the health of your hair? When you relax your hair, you're breaking down the follicles of your hair. You're breaking down the protein of your hair. So your hair is really dying. You know what I'm saying? There's no life in your hair when you're perming your hair, relaxing it. So let's talk about the health of your hair. You know, if you enjoy European style and you want to put weave down your hair and have long, straight hair down your back, what about the health of your hair? Go natural just simply for the health of your hair. And then if you want to braid it up and weave it up, that's fine. But, you know, I'm basically on two walks of life now because I'm talking to more people and I'm understanding that, you know, I like straight, long hair. Okay, if you do or if it's self-expression, at least maintain and take care of your natural hair. Your hair is strongest in its natural state.
Well, we don't have a lot of time, but I had to ask you this because I know how important it is to you. And lately you've been featured on a lot of blogs. You're featured on Soul Train, and obviously you're single, and your remix has been featured. But I feel like, you know, for little girls or young women out there who are watching or seeing or being exposed to the exposure that you're getting, it kind of speaks to the core of what's important to you, which is also giving back to the next generation, especially of young girls. How important is that for you in terms of how you craft your image in regards to how young women are out there not only perceiving you, but the idea that they can be beautiful in their own walks of life?
Well, it's very important to me because I feel like a majority of the messages that young girls are getting are telling them that they have to change themselves. Not only do they have to change their hair, they have to increase their breast size, they have to increase their butt size, they may have to be a certain complexion. God made you beautiful just the way you are, you know, so there's no reason for you to feel insecure or feel not as beautiful because you're beautiful just the way you are, just the way God made you. You don't have to perm your hair. You don't have to relax it. You don't have to get any injections. All you have to do is be positive and stay healthy and, you know, follow the mission that was put in you to do while you're here, on, you know, in this world. So my message, very important, yeah. I mean, I definitely want to be the one to say you're beautiful just the way you are because in this capitalistic system we live in, everybody's trying to sell somebody something. So beautiful just the way you are.
Just the way you are. It kind of reminded me of the Christina Aguilera song. Well, listen, where can people find out more about you? Because I'm sure they want to and know more about your campaign and your music and all that good stuff. Where can people go to see more about A Lady Named Pearl?
Mm-hmm. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. And then secondly, they can find me at www.aladynamedpearl.com. And all of my social networks are A Lady Named Pearl. A Lady Named Pearl.
Oh, fantastic, love. Thank you again for joining me. Listen, y'all, don't go anywhere. Got the last not-so-nice segment, and we'll talk about how being you is the truest, sexiest form of being yourself. Anyway, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Love and Life with Nick Nice, and we'll be right back after this.
Viratech is a publicly traded company that has created the first biotech social network. Founded by Dr. Kevin Buckman, the company has built a unique platform that will allow biotech research to become open sourced for the first time in history. A breakthrough company in the biotech industry, Viratech is publicly held, meaning anyone can become a shareholder of the company. The trading symbol is Vira, spelled V-I-R-A. More information about Viratech is available via Yahoo Finance. Just type in the ticker symbol V-I-R-A.
Oh. Chasing as the